Hello, friends, and welcome to the 8th episode of Snap Judgments, a brand new Marvel Snap podcast. As always, I'm Roy Rogers, and I'm joined by my friend, and definitely yours, Aaron Glazer. How are you doing this evening, Aaron?
I don't know. It's been a long, long week, but... Mm-hmm. And I'm not playing amazingly in Snap, but we'll come back to that as we go. I don't know if we count as brand new anymore. This is episode 8 already. That is a reasonable chunk of episodes. We'd like to thank you guys for listening. It seems like we're growing at quite the rapid clip, and we're pretty happy with that. So if you would help us continue to grow, tell your friends, tell your family, especially if they don't play Marvel Snap, because that'll be very annoying and that's funny. But tell your friends, tell your family. Get them to listen to Snap Judgments, where we make Snap Judgments.
Absolutely. I don't think technically the Spotify was working when we did when we recorded the last episode, but we are definitely on Spotify now. So we are on both Apple and Spotify now, which are, of course, your two major podcast catchers, which kind of like catch most people, feed most other podcast apps. If there's a specific place you would like to see it, please feel free to message us or leave a comment on our socials, which we will talk about at the end of the episode. Or, more importantly, join us at the Snap Fan Discord, where we have our own channel. And you can talk. Aaron's very active in there. You can talk with Aaron almost 24/7.
Oh, that's like not even remotely true. I reply like 4 hours later while I'm working. But once I'm out of, I did that just to annoy Roy, sorry. Once I'm out of work, I reply as fast as I can. Like I'm basically playing with my son and replying to chats. I really enjoy it. I'm really enjoying the conversations that are happening there. It's a lot of fun. And like, I like that it's a lot of good players, but, I don't consider myself an expert in this game. I think I'm pretty good. And like, I feel like it's a good place to like have really nice conversations that are chill and respectful. And I've been on a few other Discords and they're not always the friendliest places. I want to say that ours has been exceedingly friendly. And so has overall the SnapFan main general chat Discord still remains the single friendliest Marvel Snap Discord of all of them I have come across. So if you are a grown adult who can handle their shit, please join us there.
Absolutely. And as you can tell, we are not joined by either of our wayward other co-hosts, Will or Chris, this evening. So it's just, you're stuck with just Aaron and I this evening. I apologize in advance for that. Both Aaron and I are very tired. It has been, as Aaron said at the beginning of his intro, a very long week and one that is just going to be continue even more after this for me because I have a very long day of work ahead of me tomorrow. So let's jump right into it. Aaron, how much progress have you made in Marvel Snap over the last 7-ish days?
So absolutely done. I was at 80-ish. I'm at 81 now. I jumped up to 85. I fell back to 78. I'm back to 81. It requires a certain discipline to climb, and partially I screwed up my snap habits when I was infinite too early last year and just screwed around for a month. So my like habits of when to snap and when to retreat aren't as sharp as they were, but also like, I really don't want another stupid title. And like, while I'd like to get infinite, and I'll probably do the grind just to do it by the end, like, I'm finding that my motivation to really focus is lacking. And I don't think that's necessarily the best thing. I am, however, now pool 3 complete, which also hurts a little bit in terms of playing, because, like, opening stuff gives me no guarantee of cards. I really, really, really want to buy Deadpool, especially given the series drops, which we'll talk about later. Not Deadpool, excuse me, Darkhawk. I'd very much like to buy Darkhawk, and I have 5,100 tokens, but I don't have the Darkhawk pinned. So, like, there's not much reason to grind and want to play and want to open boxes. And all of these things are lowering my motivation to play a little bit, which is, like, considering how, like, baby whale we were and like how much I was putting into this and how much time I was putting in, it's probably not a good sign that they're giving people at the top of the ladder less reason to play, not more. Not the ladder, but the top of the, like, I don't know, attention toward the game.
Absolutely, definitely. I can see where you're coming from. On my end, I guess I made more progress, which I guess makes it me feel better from where I am right now. I was at 42, 44 when we recorded last time. I'm now 52. I was as high as 56 with 57 in sight. And then today was just a really bad Marvel Snap day for me. Very frustrating. Some bad play on my end. Some just like losing to Shang-Chi a lot. Because had I opened Shuri when we last recorded? I don't remember.
You had opened because you did it back to back.
Oh, right. Yes. I opened Shuri and Thanos. And I've played a lot of bad Thanos decks. Like, I cannot have success with any Thanos deck. Yesterday, I think I could have easily have hit my goal of 60 if I didn't fall almost to 49 playing various Thanos decks, which is slightly frustrating. I really would like Thanos to be good. I mean, there's a few cards I'm still missing, but I still am not finding that card to be very successful. Shuri, on the other hand, is Busto. It was primarily responsible for my climb to the mid-50s. The card is extremely, extremely good. Where I'm sitting right now in my pocket in the 50s, though, everyone's playing Shang-Chi. Like everyone, including decks that you're like, oh, okay, this is a destroy deck. They're usually not running Shang-Chi. Oh, this is a discard deck. They're not usually running Shang-Chi. They're not even running Zabu. I haven't seen Zabu. And they still have Shang-Chi. There's just a lot of Shang-Chi sitting around here in the pleb ranks, which is slightly frustrating. Plus, I will say that I have not enjoyed our experience with Altar of Death, which is a combination of an allocation that punishes you for playing cards into it and rewards you for playing cards into it. I think it would be a fun location to see occasionally, but again, seeing it the 40% of the time that you see it right now is just kind of obnoxious. And I have not enjoyed my time with it, which has definitely also lowered my enthusiasm for Marvel Snap. And I haven't enjoyed like playing Death Wave or something into it. Some progress on the ladder. Less progress than my goals. I'm still not really snapping or retreating in a way that I think is as consistent as I want it to be. So hopefully that's some progress I'll be able to make this week.
So I just want to note something about Thanos for listeners, for people considering buying him. I think Thanos is a bad card. I think the stones are excellent cards.
Yeah, I mean the problem is never. I think so with Thanos, it adds a lot of air to your deck, right? And although the drawing a card when you play most of them lets you churn through your deck pretty quickly, the fact that it adds air can really bite you in the butt. And that's what I found. I mean, particularly the like the Lockjaw variants that are very popular with Thanos, even with the ones with Kazar, right, are also running Lockjaw. Lockjaw is very feast or famine in general, but he is particularly feast or famine when you can drop a bunch of one drops in there and then get even more one drops, which is very frustrating. We're like, okay, all I need is like anything that is not a stone here, and you get a stone, and it's just very, very frustrating. So definitely the stones are the best part of Thanos, but also the fact that they add all of that air, I think, is one of the things that keeps the card in check.
So we haven't played together in about a week, and I don't think we've played together with Thanos at all. I think what I would likely be doing. Yeah, that's fair. I think what I'd like to do with Thanos, if I had Thanos, what I think I would do with Thanos if I were you, is not Kazar, though I do love me some Kazoo. I think what I would very likely be playing with Thanos is a Devil Dinosaur deck.
Yeah, I had a Hooglin version with Devil Dino. That was okay. It was probably the better of the Thanos decks I played, but it still was
inconsistent,
which is, I think right now what I'm looking for is like a deck that's pretty consistent. And I think actually right now the new cards I've opened have been pushing me towards cards that the decks that are less consistent. So maybe I should go back to something maybe a little bit more consistent. But anyway, we'll talk more, I guess, about that in a minute. We have a lot of Marvel Snap news. Glazer, what happened with the patch?
Okay, so it was exactly what we thought it was last week. So we talked about most of it. We're just going to talk quickly about, we're going to say what they are, and we'll talk about any impact we have seen quickly. So the following four cards lost one power. That was the only nerf they got. Negative one to Galactus, Leader, Arrow, and Nova. All four got negative one power. How have you felt that these changes have been, Roy?
I have not felt them at all. I guess there's less Nova. I've seen a little bit of Nova, but that's primarily with decks that I think are trying to abuse the current location. I've seen about the same amount of Leader and Arrow that I was seeing before. I haven't seen any more Nakia. I maybe played against one Groot, no Drax.
Wait, maybe just the nerfs.
Oh, just the nerfs? Oh, and I, weirdly, and Glazer and I were messaging about this, I hit a pocket of Galactus last night.
It's the location. The location is phenomenal with Galactus.
It is. And, you know, as I think we said in the last episode, all Galactus players have, like, a Galactus variant, and it's, like, super upgraded. And I beat most of the Galactus players. The decks I've been playing are very good against Galactus, as long as you don't get caught entirely with your pants down, or they just, like, have a call that's, like, a billion power. Which sometimes happens, but it's easy to sort of like, if your deck, like right now I'm playing a lot of late game decks, if your deck's designed to play a lot on turn 4, 5, 6, you usually have good counterplay to Galactus. The only time Galactus really has like destroyed me was like this one deck that like played a bunch of just normal cards and like wasn't like over committing to two lanes. It just felt like a normal snap game where just happened to not put anything in one lane. You know what I mean? Which sometimes happens, right? And then they just play Wave and then Galactus. I was like, where did this Galactus come from? Like, I don't understand where this Galactus came from. Like, nothing else about these. There was no decks, cards that had, up to that point, except for Wave, that had any synergy with Galactus. They were just a pile of good stuff. And I was like, okay, well, all right, I guess I lose this Galactus here. But they didn't get a lot of cubes out of me. So
sweet. Galactus has been taking all my monies lately. Galactus consistently on turn like 3 and 4 with this location without having to do any of the other shenanigans has been a problem for me. It's coming out earlier than I'm prepared. I'm pretty good at preparing for Galactus as a regular rule. However, the like way it's working with Altar of Death, it's Altar of Death?
Mm-hmm, it's Altar of Death.
Yeah. Okay, the way it's working with Altar of Death has been wrecking me, but I don't really care about Galactus. Galactus is super annoying. Altar of Death will go away by the time we are done recording this, and holy shit, can we please stop having destructive locations? Leader, I'm seeing very little difference. Nova, I'm seeing very little difference. I felt the difference with Arrow a couple times. Where I'm really seeing the difference with Arrow is around where I tend to be in MMR. A lot of people have, like, I feel like people have better cards than me. I've yet to open a pool 5 card at all. So I've been playing a lot of Shuri Arrow, and I can beat it now that it's 14 instead of 16. It's been a very notable difference. If I can read it coming, and like part of the problem is Shuri is like, are you going to be Arrow? Are you going to be Red Skull, or who just destroys me? I can't usually beat that 30 power Red Skull. Or are you going to be are you going to be Vision? And reading which of the three it is a problem, right? But like, as long as I can figure out that it's going to be Arrow reasonably based on the other stuff in the deck, or like just how they're like positioning their cards, the two power has been a difference. I've been able to like try and set things up so that it's not screwing my life up. I do want one more nerf for Arrow though, and I think it's like an actually important one for the health of the game. When Arrow pulls your card, it shouldn't mess up your reveal order.
Oh yeah.
I think that's completely obnoxious. It happened to me the other day, and I was like, that's just so stupid. Like, there's no reason for Arrow to mess up your reveal order at all, but she 100% does, and she absolutely should not. I want that nerf. I don't even care if you give the one power back. That's the real nerf I need. Leader, we know we're going to get another nerf per Ben Brode. This is just like the temporary Band-Aid. And I like, again, the Nova change is like the Sarah change. You're going to lose some extra percentage of games you would not otherwise.
Yeah, I think that's all on point. I guess for the buffs, I have not seen. I've seen maybe Groot once. Well,
but let me read through them first.
Okay.
Nakia, Blackhead, and Hazmat all got plus one strength. Groot and Drax both got plus one strength, but they also lost one strength on their ability. That's what the buffs are.
Yeah, anyway. I've seen more, like a slightly more Groot. That's it.
I've seen a decent amount of Nakia, and she has not been good. Like, I've been beating those decks. I don't think she has a home still. Mm-hmm. People are playing her in Surfer decks and Panther decks, and whenever they try and combine them, she seems to be, like, a good bridge between the two, and she's still, like, just not as good as playing, like, a Mr. Fantastic most of the time. So, not a huge fan. That you have so little control about hand placement really does affect how good a card like her is. Black Cat, I've seen a lot of, and she's still not good. She's been irrelevant. When I lose to Black Cat, I was going to lose that game anyway. When I beat Black Cat, like, cool, thanks for making it slightly easier. I've seen zero Hazmat, and I've seen a little bit of Drax, and a little, and almost no Groot, which is silly to me. I mean, I guess it makes sense given that our new card is Zabu, so Drax is 2. Drax is a 2-9 or whatever nonsense. 2-8 is a really good deal, right?
Yeah.
I think Groot's a better card than Drax.
No, because Groot goes with Silver Surfer. So
yeah, exactly. Well, I think Surfer's a better card than Zabu. I'm not sure Surfer's not my pick for best card in the game or best like build-around card in the game.
It's definitely the best build-around. It may not be the best individual card, but I would agree that it's definitely the best build-around. Well, as someone who's constantly lost to Silver Surfer recently.
Sarah is a thing too, right? Like there's build-arounds and there's build-arounds.
I don't think Sarah's a build-around card, really.
Really, I think like you, if you're playing Sarah, you're usually playing a Sarah deck. I think there's a few. Whatever. This is a topic for another time. However, I think Groot with Surfer is excellent, and Groot has unexplored synergies with what's her name? With Storm. Like a lot of people really like the Storm Juggernaut and Storm Jessica Jones plays, but Storm with Groot works basically as well as Storm with Jessica Jones. If they didn't play in that lane, you probably won it anyway, right? So just didn't matter. And if they did play in that lane, if you add a Surfer buff, which is where you're playing Groot, he is now bigger than Jessica Jones. Cool.
Reasonable. So a bunch of bundles have been announced. Two of them are out now. The first is the Pro $99, very controversial bundle. It's 12,500 credits, an ungodly number of boosters to upgrade up to 8 random cards to infinite. It also goes real quick when you buy it. I'll just spoiler alert and say that I bought this.
Me too.
I didn't even realize kind of which cards got it, which is not a big deal. Boosters are not my problem. They are not my like the chokehold of my account. I, as someone who is like 75 at that point, I think 75-85% done with Pool 3 and wants to get through Pool 3. And unlike Laser, I will feel very good being just sort of done with Pool 3 where it is now and just sort of slowly adding the cards as they shift down. Totally awesome to me. I'll keep opening boxes just as I play and finish my my dailies. I found a huge amount of value to me. I opened a bunch of cards that immediately improved the decks that I was playing. I still have not opened Crossbones, which is like driving me crazy. But I opened Quinjet, for example, a card I've really wanted. And I opened a bunch of variants that I really enjoyed. So I feel like, again, my personal experience is I felt like it was $100 well spent. I got basically the same as the box of Magic the Gathering that I will be purchasing in a few weeks. I got about the same amount of joy for about the same amount of money after tax. So there's how I feel about the bundle.
I'm okay with the bundle. I bought it too. I got it largely because, like, I figured it's my last probably big purchase unless they throw a bajillion tokens at me. I will happily give them money for collector's tokens. They just don't seem to want that money. But I was like two cards away from finishing pool three, and rather than spend a week going, did I do it? I was like, guess what? I did it. So I did, and I got something like 4,000 plus collector's tokens out of it. A little less than 4,000 in that general vicinity of 4,000 collector's tokens. So I'm going to buy myself a Dark Hawk as soon as Dark Hawk turns up. I think it's probably worth it. Credits are a big deal. I am annoyed that they're not giving us collector's tokens in any of these anymore. But I think the Pro Pack is a good idea just if you're like... So I don't think it's a good idea in Pool 1 or Pool 2 like at all. But basically the instant you're Pool 3, saying plus 6 cards to your collection is a good deal.
Yeah, it's all about your budget. I understand people like who think all these bundles are too expensive, because they feel like spending $100 on this is, on any digital card game is ridiculous, whatever. All fine arguments. But I think that in the realm of experiences that I have with these things, yes, $100 can get you a AAA game, but like I'm not spending $100 on a game like Marvel Snap to get a AAA game. Does that make sense to you, Aaron, what I mean by that?
Like, yeah, it's you're getting a different thing, right? Like,
yeah.
If I go out, like if every comparison I make with things I do is a AAA game, right? Like I'm going to go out to dinner where I guess we're going for lunch with my wife. I'm going to spend $150 on Saturday. Like, that's a thing that's going to happen. We're going out to, like, a fairly fancy lunch. It's one of our friend's birthday, and he's joining us, and I haven't gotten him anything, so I'll probably end up paying for him. I'm going to spend easily $150. There is no chance I enjoy that single meal nearly as much or nearly as long as I did would a AAA game that I really enjoyed, right? However, that's not how money works. Things have different values. It's not a direct comparison. Marvel Snap money is not a AAA game money. It's Marvel Snap money. It is compared to how much enjoyment I get for it at that time. And like, I get the like whole, like I'm going to make everything an EV thing, but like, it's not the way I choose to live my life. I think that it's, to me personally, quite limiting.
Yeah,
it means that like unless you get more enjoyment out of something than a AAA game for $60, you should never do it. And that's like, but like that's I work very hard to be able to enjoy things, so I'm going to.
I feel you when you say that, my friend. I think we are definitely in the danger zone, to quote the other podcast we're in about this. Considering the amount of vitriol I've seen about this specific bundle, so let's move into bundle. I think you and I both agree is not really worth
poopy
the value unless you specifically want those arts, right? Unless you specifically want that art. I think if you really love knockoff Frank, what's that classic artist name? It's escaping me. Frank something.
Miller?
No, not Frank Miller. Frank Food. He did like Conan art, like most Conan art you've seen. Like it's okay, like him.
Sure.
It's escaping me. It's really
going
to come to me.
Here, you Google that. I will ramble about this. So it is three variants and avatars for 3,000 gold. 3,000 gold is the equivalent of about $43, according to SnapZone. Thank you, SnapZone. That's and only 1,500 credits. To me, that's an absurdly bad deal. 1,500 credits is less than playing for a week. And like, the variants and avatars are cool, but like, that's just like $17 per avatar or something silly. I don't know. I'm an English teacher. I'm pretty sure I just butchered that math. But like, that's a third, whatever. $16? Math is hard.
It's Frank, by the way.
Frank Fazetta, sure. I hate this deal. I get why it exists. I think the pricing on this is excessive. I think you could easily make this like $30 and it would be a really solid deal, and I still wouldn't buy it because I don't really care about variants. But like, I think then everyone goes, oh cool, $10 a pop, that's reasonable. Like saying $43 just feels excessive. And like, if you're gonna do it, at least give a reasonable number of credits, right? And they didn't.
I mean, like 700 credits is $10, right? So like a base variant is $10, right? I just had to double check to make sure. And I am occasionally willing to spend that $10 on a variant if I'm like But if I, for example, I'm playing a deck that has Red Skull a lot, and I hate playing a like kind of like cool, normal looking version of a Nazi, I was like, I need to like a Red Skull variant. That's goofy looking.
Hey, if you like Nazis, please turn our podcast off.
There we go. Like, I was just like, this Red Skull thing, like, I don't know. I wouldn't, Red Skull wouldn't have been in my top, like, 100 Marvel characters to adapt. So I bought the chibi, like, Red Skull, because I'm like, oh, yes, goofy Nazi, cool. Like, make fun of him. Like, that's cool. And so I spent $10 on that. So if you like this art, I think that the value is fine. I do agree with you that I wish they'd give you some more credits. I think they're trying to create these like art bundles that have like some additional value that lets them slightly inflate it, which I would just prefer that like, really, if you want to sell like four variants, you know, like make them slightly less gold than if you had just straight up bought them with gold and for cash. And I think you would get people be a little less upset. I think it's the like idea that really right now, if you want to advance your account in a timely manner, bundles are the only way to do so. That these bundles that like have a paucity of credits really just like annoy people. I mean, but also of course they can give you a $100 bundle that gives you a ton of credits and people are still upset. But I think that that's part of it at least. And I think a little bit better, I mean, this would be interesting. A little bit better of a value is the upcoming, I believe it's in 2 days. It comes out from when this, so roughly when this podcast will release, we're recording on Thursday, by the way, is Dino Sized, which is 4,000 gold, roughly $57, for 5,000 credits, a Devil Dinosaur variant and the avatar for it, and enough boosters to go to infinite twice for him.
So this is just, you're buying the credits and you get a dino as a bonus and the boosters.
And the boosters.
Like, this is basically almost exactly, it's like $57 for 5,000 credits is about what you would end up spending, for that many credits. Fine. Like, just fine. I don't really want this because I don't really care about that variant. Mm-hmm. Although, like, again, like, oh, baby, lock me up a Darkhawk and we'll start talking, right? Like,
yeah.
Because then I just want some credits, and like if I'm going to buy credits from the shop, I might as well buy this. But like, this is a better deal than the Primal Masterpiece by a lot, because 5,000 credits is still a reasonable chunk. But like with no tokens, this is still like, I'm very shrug about this. Like, I think this is a mediocre deal at best. I don't want to buy it. I'm really hoping not to buy it again. I will totally have no self-control once I lock Darkhawk, but until I get to that Darkhawk, I don't want to buy this because I don't want to reward them because for mediocre deals.
I have 4,000 gold.
Oh,
so
wait. Yeah. Oh, I have enough gold to do this immediately. But so also,
that's way more tempting to me than if this was just cash right now. Because in my brain, gold is imaginary money, not real money. So
it's definitely not, because there will be another big pass, like the holiday pass, cyber holiday pass at some point.
At some
that point. Will cost gold, and I would rather have gold for them.
That's a future
Roy problem. All right. So I would also like to note that it is $99 for the Pro Bundle for 12,500 credits, assuming you care about advancing your collection primarily, whereas this is $57 for 5,000. So the Pro Bundle is a much better per credits for dollars deal.
Yeah. I think that for me personally, this bundle falls in the ideal time if they're going to get me to spend a significant chunk of money on Marvel Snap. Mostly because Fire Emblem Engage doesn't come out until next Friday. And so my gaming time is still wide open for a little while. And so I'm more willing to put in the hours that I would feel like this is like of value because I'm playing a ton of Marvel Snap versus just sort of more casually playing it. Why I instead play Fire Emblem Engage. Let's go to the last one, which I know I'm going to buy.
1,000%. This is the best deal.
It's $5 for 500 credits, 500 gold, a Jubilee avatar variant. I like base Jubilee, but I also want a cool like Lunar New Year Jubilee variant. Cause one, I play a lot of Jubilee decks. Two, Jubilee is a cool character. three. I don't know. Do I need anything else? Like, it's awesome. It's
good we talked about Jubilee variants. This would not be the top of mine. I don't think I actually like the variant more than I do the regular Jubilee for this one. However, in order to buy 500 gold, you need how many dollars? I'm sorry. I almost bought the fucking terrible pack.
$10. It's 700 for 10.
So 500 gold. Sorry. For $5, you usually get 300 gold. So you're getting more gold and 500 credits on top of it, in addition to an avatar and a variant I don't really care about. Just give me better deals than you have in the shop on other things for your bundles, and you can have my money, is basically where I stand on this. If your deal is significantly better or makes me feel better than just buying shit in the shop, you've got me. So the Festival Fireworks is 200 more gold for $5 than I would usually get. Not that I just buy gold, plus 500 credits, plus an avatar. That is way, way better to me. So I am 100% buying this. I strongly urge listeners, if you're going to buy anything but a season pass, to buy this to show the developers that this is the kind of thing we want. Because, I mean, I know for sure this is the kind of thing I want, and I hope it's the kind of thing you want.
Yeah. Next season is, spoiler alert, well, moving on from bundles, to be clear, next season's pass is an Ant-Man and the Wasp season. Do you not love that cross synergy there? MODOK.
Wait, why is it cross synergy?
Because next month the Ant-Man and the Wasp movie comes out.
Oh, okay. I was just making sure that our listeners knew that.
Oh, sure. Well, I'm sure we'll talk about it plenty, because goddamn am I hyped for that movie. Really? Ant-Man and the Wasp. So there's going to be variants based on Ant-Man the Wasp, and I believe Stature / Stinger is getting a card next month.
We don't know for sure, but it seems very likely.
Yeah, so Cassie Lang is getting a card, but the big one is MODOK, who was confirmed in the last trailer of being in the movie, is a 5/8 on reveal, a discard your hand. What do you think about that, Aaron? You go first.
It's a hella card. So this is a huge step down. This is much more in line with Miles Morales, although I think it's better than Miles Morales. In the very first public season, the one that both Ryan and I started playing in, it is way, unless I'm missing something, and like someone will tell me if I'm wrong, but way worse than Surfer and Zabu, which are both meta-defining cards. This feels like it makes hella decks easy, or makes a hella package easy to run. Because, like, you can just run literally all sixes with hella and a, whatchamacallit, Invisible Woman. Drop Invisible Woman, literally do nothing else, sit there, play this, play hella, and then have a great day. Right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's kind of all this does. That's not my style of game. I actually think that kind of game is extraordinarily boring, but it's a card, I guess. Will I buy the season pass? Probably. Again, like I said, for the Festival Fireworks pack, you give me a better deal than, also, I would hate to open MODOK in a pack if I didn't just buy him, but like, you give me a better deal than I would get from just buying the gold plane, and you got my money. As long as you keep doing that, unless they blow that, as long as you keep doing that, they have my money. But I am not a fan of the gameplay patterns that this card promotes.
I think this card, I mean, I agree with the things you said, except like, I'm much more willing to sort of play a hella deck that plays this card in Invisible Woman. And second, I'm also much more into Ant-Man and the Wasp, so I would probably buy this for the cosmetics. So that's up there for this. But I also think this effect is really powerful in, like, it makes a card like Black Cat, right? You know, it's interesting as well. Like, it's an additional sort of really powerful discard. And I think it's going to open up new decks, plus being the hella deck that Glazer described, just simply because it's such a, like, novel effect of discarding the entire hand.
It's decent with Dracula too. It's got some uses.
It's got uses. Like, I think there's going to be some at least there used to be some interesting decks. I do also agree. I think it's at the power level of Black Panther, which is that it is strong in a couple existing decks. It's going to push some new decks and have some weird corner case uses, but it's definitely not Surfer Zabu level of, you know, utterly transforming the metagame around it. Where I think that this card is going to be really bad and annoying is random card creation effects. If you get this card from X Mansion, you like your fun will go down way more than almost any card you could, like, short of Galactus. Who, well, all
it,
right,
it,
like,
it pulls Lockjaw out of your regular discard decks too, right?
Yeah.
Like, you Lockjaw into this, you're just like, oh shit.
Yeah. So I think that I hope that they program this card to show up very infrequently from X Mansion or any other sort of like random put effects like into play. So that's basically where I feel on this card.
What's that location that when it reveals, it just pulls a card from your hand at random?
Oh, Sakaar.
That's going to be amazing.
That is going
to
be.
Looking forward to that never happening to me because I will never play this card.
I'm looking forward to it happening to me every single time I have a good hand. similar to District X.
Oh man, I still haven't played Gambit. I gotta build a Gambit deck.
I should. Yeah, I still haven't played the Gambit deck either. Anyway, finally, the big news, which is the series drop, comes at the end of the month, sort of right before the Ant-Man and the Wasp season starts.
A week before, but also it comes with the friendly battles.
With the friendly battles, so that means tournaments can exist. There's a big thing about the friendly battles that they are going to be region locked. So depending on what region and how they break their regions, you know, that's not going to affect Glazer and I, for example. We're both on the East Coast of the United States. We're almost certain to be in the same region. I imagine North America will be a region, then Europe, maybe Asia. But we'll see. I mean, they could be in the point where they have to be like East, West, Central United States. Who knows? They plan as soon as they can to get rid of region locking friendly battles. But just keep the heads up if you have friends that are in other parts of the world that you want to do friendly battles with, or if you wanted to organize tournaments as soon as friendly battle came, that is a big sort of thing to overcome. But that brings
us... if anyone wants to fly us to New York to be part of a tournament, it's real cheap for me.
Okay.
I live in New York, dear listener.
Just to be clear. Well, near New York. Anyway.
I live in New York.
You live in the great state. You live in the Empire State, but you don't live in New York, New York. Not anymore, at least.
Not anymore. It's been a while.
All right. So from 5 to 4 is Black Panther, Shuri, Bast, Valkyrie, Super Skrull. They're keeping in 5 Thanos, Darkhawk, Call, Sentry, and the new cards that are releasing that month.
You missed Galactus.
On Galactus, I apologize.
Wait, let's stop and talk for a second.
Okay.
So I think I'm happy with everything but Super Skrull going from 5 to 4. I really don't want Super Skrull to be around more.
Why?
I think Super Skrull is not very good, but when it is very good, it tends to be unfun for the other person.
A lot of these pool 5 cards are like that.
I think Black Panther, Shuri, Bast, and Valkyrie are, as long as they're more common, not unfun. I think the big problem with Shuri and Bast, is that like you see someone play them, you're like, you lucky son of a bleep. Yeah. Or you Willy son of a beep, or you beta player son of a bleep. Either which way. I think Shuri is one of the like 5 or 6 cards with a claim for the best card in the game. Mm-hmm. But I'm happy more people have the option to play all of these except Bast, because Roy was with me the other day when I was climbing really consistently and lost a bajillion cubes to Bast negative decks. So I'm a little mad at Bast. I'm very excited to get my hands on everything else, and I don't like Super Skrull as a card. I think it should continue to be rare and rarely seen.
Yeah, I agree with you as well. I think that I get why on a like super villains are cool. Like, I imagine Kang the Conqueror, who's also a rumored card, I believe Snap Van has data mined him, will probably also stay permanently at 5, like these big marquee supervillains. On a power level, I'm glad Galactus is there, because, like, again, the more people have Galactus, I think...
The less fun it is.
The less fun a lot of people will have. Thanos isn't really like that. Like, again, I've played a lot of Thanos at this point. He's fine. Like, he's good. I'm sure if he was around more, people would break him. But I think at the end of the day, he's a mid-range card and not really like an NPE. No one's like, oh, gosh, darn it. I'm playing against Thanos compared to like Galactus or Call. Like they are. Oh God, it's like, oh, OK, this Call is 5 billion power. Great. Cool. So yeah, I would like actually to see Thanos get a little bit more ubiquitous while the other fives that they keep it in there. I imagine like Darkhawk and stuff will move down sooner rather than later.
So we know part of our later topic is that next month, Surfer will be moving down, which is probably a good thing, which seems to indicate that most pool five cards are going to be spending 2 months in pool five before they move down, which I think is a reasonable rate.
I think it is. They want to make you have to buy the thing.
If you want it, buy it
right away. Yeah.
And well, we'll get to more of that later about how that's effective. I'm fine with Galactus staying up. Thanos staying up there, not because I don't think it would be cool for more people to have him, but because he breaks the rules of the game in a way nothing else does, and I think that's worth keeping rare.
That's fair.
I would also like it if Null stayed in six. I don't think Null is actually very good, but I think Null with Galactus is reasonably abusive.
Oh, yeah. Null with Galactus is annoying. It's like, oh, do you have, like, are you going second, and do you have... exactly one card, then you beat it. And if not,
then Null wins, right? Like, yeah, it's reasonably lame.
The good news out there is there are thousands of Zoomer call fans out there. Like, you know, for you and I, who at this point are just like gray haired idiot comic book fans who, you know, aren't necessarily
still brown.
Big on the like modern Marvel Comics continuity, but like they did a whole ass crossover about that guy that sold really well.
So I thought he was the wrong character until like a week ago. In my head, he was the villain of Spider-Verse, the Morbius daddy.
Oh yeah,
not Morbius, Moby, whatever his name is. You know what I mean, right?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Like the one who's like the vampire one, not the symbiote king.
Yeah, the JMS villain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, so oopsie. Yeah, that was like literally just straight up wrong. Shows how much shit I give about that series. But here we are. Either way, I still don't like that card, particularly with Galactus. Otherwise, I don't think he matters.
I wouldn't be surprised if he stays in five, though.
Let him like get a nice like little pool of like you have to get lucky or spend money to get them.
All right. She-Hulk, Absorbing Man, Titania, and Luke Cage are moving down to three. I'm really happy about She-Hulk because I think it's just fair that this card should become more common for people. Mm-hmm. Absorbing Man, I'm a little bit more in your like camp about how you feel about Skrull. I feel about Absorbing Man. Titania, whatever. The card isn't just, it's a card.
It's good.
Great,
but it's good.
And then Luke Cage. So the Luke Cage is probably the card I'm most skeptical about here because I think it makes the Hazmat deck. I think what keeps the Hazmat deck's
not good.
I mean, maybe it's not good. Who knows? Like,
oh, I know it's not good.
Do you have Luke Cage?
Yeah, I played a whole bunch of it.
You played a whole bunch
when I was
of it?
In Infinite. I played like a shit ton of it for like. I think it's very fun, but I think it's like bad.
Bad, like bad, or just like inconsistent.
I mean, look, it can go off, but like so can lots of things, right? Mm-hmm. I think that even when it goes off, it loses a reasonable amount.
Okay. Well, all I'm saying is you're going to see a lot more of it on the ladder when that card is three. And
yeah, that's fine. It's not terribly hard to beat. Like a Cosmo, an Enchantress, or whatever just rocks its face.
Fair.
Like it's not that big a deal. I'm very happy for the others. I have three of these four cards. I've done a good job at pulling pool four since I've never pulled a pool five. I bought She-Hulk and I've opened both Absorbing Man and Luke Cage. Absorbing Man has become much better with Zabu's existence. Mm-hmm. Absorbing Man is now like a very good card. It's also a very good card with Surfer. If you can figure out multiple ways. Sarah, I'm currently using magic. I think magic is actually the better way to do it, but whatever, to each their own. Magic Surfer into Absorbing Man is real, real, real nice. And then you don't need to, like, it gives you an out if you don't pull Brain. If you don't pull the card. Oh, Zabu. Then you have an out to still be able to Surfer and copy Surfer. And it's just it's basically a secondary Wong. You choose between that and that. And Absorbing Man is also really, really, really good with a Brood in that type of deck.
It's true. I've seen you do a lot of brood into brood with Absorbing Man.
Yeah, and it's a 3-power brood, so it's got a little extra juice to it. Titania's fine. It's a good card. Like, it's one of those, like, a lot of my top end is turn 5, five cost, and I'm going second. A 1/5 is a really great deal. And, like, in something like a Sarah deck or something built similar to a Sarah deck where you're going second, being able to, like, last turn drop, I don't know, Shang-Chi or Enchantress and Titania after they can't play anything is very nice. Like, the best twos are about 5-power, so, like, this is on rate for a card with one more cost. I think these are the right four to move down, because I think these are the only four pool fours that are, like, good. I think the others are Coulson, who's, I guess, exists fine. And is fine.
People like him, like, they build this Coulson deck, so.
Adama, who's, I guess, fine. I am frustrated by Adama because of the existence of all the move cards more than anything else. I have definitely been amused at, like, that's an invisible woman. I wonder what happens if I Polaris it over here. Oops, that was an Adama. It exploded. Helicarrier, which is, I guess, fine. I have Coulson and Helicarrier. Those are the other two cool things I have. Now, yeah. Again, a fine card. Like, it's got some, like, cool little janky uses. M'Baku, who is good in Cerebro too, but otherwise, like, utterly unplayable. Maria Hill, Chris's least favorite card. And
I have her too.
Orca, who has the lowest win rate in the game currently.
I mean, Orca is like, how do I put this? I actually have the opposite feeling. I think that these cards should all just be pool 3, because they're just garbage. Oh, not garbage. I mean, all right, a lot of them are just garbage.
Honestly, they should be pool 2.
Yeah. But, you know, they want to keep cards in pool. They want to do the classic, like, draft. This is draft chaff of Marvel Snap, right? It's up there with, like, Crystal or whatever, which, you know, some of them have niche uses that are good. And some of these may get better over time. Like,
a few Baku,
I think, will get better over time. Like, I'm sure I just would prefer a lot of these cards to just sort of slide down.
So that since they left 6, I think next month 3 more move down, and they'll just do it slowly.
Yeah, but they definitely, moved all of the marquee ones down that, like, people are thirsty for. And maybe M'Baku is the other one that I see, like, a decent amount of on the ladder, because I think Hooglin likes M'Baku a lot.
Cerebro too is a good deck. Really high win percentage, even though I literally cannot win a game with it no matter what I do.
I win occasionally with it. I find it pretty inconsistent. Some things can go over it, like Surfer. But I think that's enough discussion of the direct news. But Marvel Snap Zone has compiled a lot of comments by the developers from the official Marvel Snap Discord. I believe we've got Brode and Steven, whose last name we do not have on here. But this is Brode himself, who's the creative director, and then one of the lead developers. And we've got some comments here that Glazer and I both wanted to talk about. So the first sort of question that we've got here is, this was asked of Brode, is the change to title for Hitting Infinite a permanent change, or is the plan to cycle through Avatar/Cardback titles? Brode responded, no, we are discussing some other option for Infinite players. This has been a hot topic, like the value of Hitting Infinite. So what do you think about this, Aaron?
I see no value to Hitting Infinite right now. Hitting 90 has wonderful value. And getting the card back, I guess, was okay. I don't really care about card backs. I constantly just use whatever the default one is without paying too much attention. But, like, we need something. I don't know what we need for that. But, like, give me, like, so you don't want to just reward your best players with more in-game currency, right? Because that just further widens the gap. But, like, I want something cool for Infinite. And so far, they've given me a bunch of nothing. And it's genuinely hurting my motivation. What do you think they should do for Infinite players, Roy?
I'm trying to think what's the best way to put this. I actually think one of the smarter things that Magic Arena did was not super incentivize hitting Mythic after a while, which is their highest level. I think that, like, constantly, every month, you will miss a cosmetic is, like, a toxic attitude towards, like, hitting infinite and these sort of grinds. I think that there should be something that you can acquire that, like, signifies that you have been infinite at least once, right? I think that whether that's a title or a card, like a card back, but like something small, even if it is like a little boop that you could put on like something, like I just something that says like, okay, I hit infinite, right? Like that's a cool thing to have, but I think like making something really high demand, like I think leads to sort of toxic ladder behavior that I think they want to avoid. I understand the only way to achieve anything in Marvel Snap right now is through the ladder, and to progress is through the ladder. But as now that they've added friendly battles and hopefully over time they'll add additional things, you'll be able to not have to sweat that so much. Like, you know, I hit Mythic multiple times in Magic Arena, but it was like a goal I set for myself. And once I like stopped setting that goal, it was fine. Like I didn't really feel like I was like missing anything each month, which maybe, you know, some people would say, well, that's what they need to do. They need to make you do that. But I don't think so. And I definitely don't think adding in-game currency is a good idea, because that also promotes like toxic behavior. Like I want to make sure that I hit 70 so I get those 500 credits, which is an infinite split, right? Like that's toxic behavior too. So they're kind of in an impossible situation. So like the legend card back in Hearthstone, which you, I don't know if they still do this, but when I was playing, like if you hit legend, you got a card back and you could put that out. And that would say that, hey, I hit legend at least once. I think that's that kind of like, you set that goal, you achieve it, reward that I think is good.
I'm cool with that. All right. The next one is, Ben was asked if the current card acquisition system is good for player retention. I'm going to read the reply because I want to make sure that we actually understand it. In the end game, which is where I am and Roy is quickly approaching, if you're not there, just keep at it. You will get there. It's like a 4 or 5 month process if you're not putting money in, I believe. In the end game, players will be getting an average of 4 new cards a month. As free to play, you'll be able to choose whether that's a Series 5 card and the Series 3 cards that have just been demoted, or 2 Series 4 cards and the Series 3 cards that have just been demoted. So you're getting... So we're assuming, based on this, that there will be 3 or 4 series, 4 cards going to series 3 a month, right?
Hold on. So you're going to get 4 new cards a month.
On average. Which means you can get 2 series 4 cards that have just been demoted, right? Because the idea is that you have most of everything. Tokens. We're talking specifically through tokens.
Okay.
So you're getting the ones you want only. Right. Mm-hmm. So you're getting 2 series 4 cards and then the series 3 cards that have just been demoted. And I think the assumption is that you're able to get 2 more of those.
Well, they're keeping the every 4 boxes you get a series 3 card, right? And so as things move down to series 3,
you'll get them.
You'll get them pretty quickly, right? Like
if there's only 1 or 2 that you have to get in a month, yeah, you're gonna get you.
If you're completing like your dailies and your weekly like quest that gives you all those credits,
right? You'll get 2 or 3 a week, right? Like as a general rule,
yeah.
Like if you don't spend money, 2 or 3 new cards a week seems to be about what the average is.
Yeah, or, I mean, even like 2 cards a week.
But even so, if there's 4 that go down, right? Like you'll get 2 of those real fast. Yep. Which means all the rest of your boxes again become tokens, at which point you're getting a whole bunch.
Enough to purchase. It seems the impression is like, okay, so because the one thing I'm just slightly confused about the way this is phrased to me is he talking about where he says, get an average of 4 new cards a month? Got that, all right. You either choose whether that's a series 5 card and the series 3 cards or 2 series 4 cards. So he's talking the series 5 and the series 4. He's talking about that's what you would buy with your tokens, and then the series 3 cards are what you open, correct?
Correct. Okay. Which means you're getting 4 new cards a month. I believe so, because the next question addresses that. Because he's asked what the plan is, and the answer is, yeah, one thing that's a bummer is the basic token acquisition before unlocking every series 3 card. About 1,000 token a month for the free-to-play player. enough to get a new Series 3 card of your choice every month, which I think is perfectly fine. A lot of people are like, but then the new cards, and I can't ever get the new cards. You're still getting new cards. All the cards you open are new cards for you. They are new cards that you can play with. Like, just because they're not shiny new for everyone doesn't mean they're not new for you. And I don't have super patience for that, because what you're doing is unlocking new decks each new card. Or at least unlocking new builds for decks each new card. Once you have all the Series 3 cards, you're getting between 5,500 and 6,000 a month of tokens. That's enough to get either one Series 5 or two Series 4 each month. That's enough to get the favorite Series 5 card from the three that release in a four-week season, assuming you buy the season pass. I think that's going to feel better, and the new Series 5 cards won't feel impossible to get. However, since most players haven't kept most of Series 3, there's people are still upset, and the feedback has been helpful, and please keep it up. So, like, I'm ultimately, like, this isn't ideal for me being endgame, like, being able to buy a couple cards a month. So my current plan right now is to buy Darkhawk, then save up for Shuri, then save up for the next batch and see how I feel at the end of the next month. And then just like, I will automatically have an extra, like, so that's two cards, right? Like, I should have by the middle of next month is my current open plan, unless they give me a way to buy tokens. Plus, I should have, relatively quickly also be getting Titania. So, like, I'm looking at maybe three new cards next month. I don't know how that feels. I don't know if that's enough pace for me to, like, have new things to do and keep me excited. Right?
I mean, you'll have to see. I think it's something you're going to actually have to experience, Aaron, to, like, really wrap your mind around it. You know what I mean? Like, I definitely feel like this is definitely an experiential learning kind of thing. Versus, like, it's easy to say things in theory. Because in theory, this seems really good to me. I think the problem is that I feel like the current way you acquire cards in this game is very gotcha. Like, it's very much, it's closer to, oh my god, what's the JRPG that is a gotcha game that people love? It's escaping me. The students play it. Oh my god.
Genshin,
there we go. In Genshin Impact. Than it is to Magic the Gathering, right? Because Magic the Gathering also has the gacha system of opening packs, but there's also, you know, the best card in gaming, your credit card, which, you know, can just, in case of physical Magic cards, you can just go to Star City Games, buy those cards, boom, you got them. Or if you know, on getting wild cards in Magic Arena, you know, which was a little bit of like a weird relationship of like how you got wild cards. Now you can just straight up buy them. But before it was like you buy packs, boom, and you get a certain number of wild cards. Like, there's like tokens are kind of the wild card equivalent and in Marvel Snap. But because of the nature of the token shop being random. So it's not like, okay, I'm a whale. I spend my $100 to get a certain number of tokens to buy a card. I then also have to wait for Galactus to cycle around to me. And depending on how big my collection is and how much the shop wants to offer me these like super ultra variants, right? I may not see Galactus for a period of time. And I think the fact that the token shop is random, I think is the source
obnoxious
of this. Of people being consistently upset. I think that if you were able to pick and choose, like, okay, once I have my wild card / tokens, I can just go to the shop, click Galactus, buy Galactus, and be done. I think that that would like sort of quiet down some of the complaints, because both like free-to-play players can set a clear goal of saving certain number of things and then get the card they want. Or whales can just be like, spend X amount of money in the Marxian style of turning money into something else. And, you know, why money is the universal whore. And then you can get what you want. But that additional step of then waiting for it to cycle around, like, you know, as like, you know, for a long time, I want a destroyer, right? And I just waited forever for that to cycle around. I was checking literally every single, like, in at my lunch every day, checking the 2 o'clock spot. First thing I did every morning, check the token shop, right? Great to getting me on the app, but not getting me to play, but getting me on the app, which I get what they're doing. But I think if they reduce the randomness, maybe offering you three options.
Yeah, that's what I was hoping. Give three at a time.
Three at a time. Like, that might be better. But, like, I think the fact that you can't immediately get the amount of currency you want, either through time for free-to-play players or money for whales, is in many ways the central issue of what people's complaints about. I think at this point, their complaints about the economy.
Because I do think there's enough. I agree.
Yeah, I think there's enough opportunities now, once this system rolls out, for free-to-play players to get the currencies they need to get the specific cards. But the fact that there's these additional steps, because Broad is obsessed with that, like, gotcha random, like, like, feeling, is, I think, the source of a lot of the discontent.
I very much agree. They are literally costing themselves money in the game right now by not giving me a way to, like, turn the stuff I've spent into just getting the card I want. Right? Like, I don't have Darkhawk. I want Darkhawk. Okay. What change can that card be expected to get? Cyclops will not be changed in the upcoming patch or ever. This isn't huge news. No one should expect this. It just makes me sad. Cyclops is perhaps my favorite Marvel character. If you think Cyclops is boring, then you don't know why Cyclops was right.
You've been watching too much Jay and Miles, or listening to too much Jay and Miles.
Cyclops loves Jay and Miles. Jay and Miles, loves Cyclops.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
No, Jay loves Cyclops.
Jay loves Cyclops. I think, I mean, it's one of those things where some cards are going to be a dud, and sometimes those cards are going to be your favorite Marvel character. Like, I mean, Wolverine kind of sucks too, and Wolverine is, like, the, you know, what used to be Marvel's Batman, and is still, like, one of the most popular characters
in Marvel. Probably the third-ish most popular Marvel character.
Yeah, and Spidey is still very niche, right? Like, and that's Spider-Man, right? Captain America is very niche, and that's Captain America. Like,
Iron Man remains very good.
Too much Iron Man. I've seen too much Iron Man recently. And I said this as an Iron Man fanboy, too much Iron Man.
I don't like Iron Man that much. Whatever. Okay. We good to move on to the next one?
Of course, yeah.
All right. How does downgrading to pool 3 affect token acquisition? All players open 100 tokens, the regular 100 tokens you can get just from your... remember that your one, each of your four boxes has a rate of dropping something. So your one in four will be a currency that will be gold or credits or tokens. That's still 100 tokens, even when you're pool 3 complete. When you would open a card, your, like, guaranteed card, those one in four, that can be a series 4 or 5 card, but that's still very rare. In the cases it's not a series 4 or 5 card, that becomes 200 to 600 tokens. I've gotten 600 tokens twice, which is pretty awesome. Apparently, after 32 boxes, he says, or so, it will average out to the same as if you got 4,000 every box. I've just started reasonably well.
I mean, 400, not 4,000.
400, thank you. 400. So, fine, whatever. I've started reasonably hot, and I'm happy with that. Boxes only generate content as of right now when you open them, apparently, which means that you can save your boxes until the update, and you will have a greater chance of getting the new cards, or the recently downgraded cards, which I think is worth doing. It is a decent whaley thing to do that I don't have nearly enough self-control to do.
If you're series 3 complete. If you're not, then there's no...
Well, there is if you want a chance to open She-Hulk more, right?
I guess that's true. That's true.
Although I'd rather just rush through Series 3. I think rushing through Series 3 is the big bottleneck of the game right now.
That's fair. Yeah, I've got nothing really to add there. So we've got only a couple more of these things. One's real quick. If I pin a card in the token shop and it gets downgraded, will the pricing adapt, or will I need to unpin and cycle it again? According to one of the lead developers, pricing will adapt. Awesome. And then
Wait, hang on. Let's explain what that means very quickly. If I pin Shuri tomorrow and I wait till July 31st, Shuri will no longer be 6,000. Shuri will be 3,000 tokens.
Yeah.
And that's important.
I apologize. It felt self-explanatory to me, but yes.
I would like to be clear. I'm a teacher. I've also said lots of clear things that kids have been like, huh?
That's fair. I apologize. I should have been more thoughtful. Since Black Panther will go to Series 4 next month, can we expect other season cards to get the same treatment? Basically, every season pass card dropped to Series 4 dropped to Series 4 after 3 months. Yes, Silver Surfer will follow the same path next month, which Glazer talked about at the beginning. So that means that there's just going to be a steady path that every other month one of these cards is going to drop down. So after Silver Surfer, it will then be the Big Cat, and then it will be MODOK and whatever they decide the following season pass cycle. I don't think that's been data mined yet. Will be.
And now, listener questions. Jacavio asks, why is Sarah so good? Do you have any ideas, Roy?
Well, I mean, we got in a little bit of an argument about this, but earlier, the reason why I'll just sort of lay out my philosophy, the reason why, while you can build decks around Sarah, the reason why I don't think Sarah's a build-around card is that a one-cost reduction is just so generically good. In card games, anything that cheats the resource system is good. That's just a fundamental thing. The card pool may not exist to abuse it when it is initially printed, but something will come around that synergizes with something that breaks the resource system. And Sarah, even though it doesn't let you reduce the natively itself, does not let you reduce it lower than one. Mm-hmm. There are other effects that do so, let you do zero. It definitely, definitely, definitely is one of the most powerful effects because it cheats the resource system. And so that's why Sarah is so good. It is a fundamental, going all the way back to Alpha and Magic the Gathering, anything that cheats the resource system is busted.
It especially works nicely here because the resource system is fixed. Mm-hmm. So since the resource system is fixed, you know that if you get to turn 5 and see Sarah, you can play it. And if you've built your deck for that, you know you can abuse it. There's no, oh man, I wish I could abuse Sarah. If you draw her and have her on turn 5 and you have built your deck properly, she is abusable. She's abusable in lots of ways. There's, I think, 3 ways to build Sarah decks right now that are relevant. The first way is you run a bunch of 2 costs and then you run what amounts to a kazoo turn, the last turn of the game. That's the famous miracle turn. You can run the Surfer. I just played 3 drops. I played a bunch of 3 drops leading into Sarah, and now my whole board gets a giant pump. And 3 drops tend to have some nice abilities, so it's a nice extra bonus. And then the last way is you want to play some kind of control pieces at the end of the game along with a mini miracle turn. A later question Jacavio asks, and we're not going to get into as much detail about this now as we will later, but how do you build around Arrow, basically? I think there are 3 different Arrow decks, and the Sarah one is saying, I'm going to make all of your cards go over here by playing this Sarah making Arrow a 4-drop. I'm going to make your last turn be in this corner of the play while I can still play either another 3-drop, which has reasonable strength, or 2 other 2-drops, say, for argument's sake, Lizard and Mysterio, which are going to do a bunch of other things and make the game better for you and help you win the game. So you're adding 8 or 9 power somewhere and 7 power a place that they don't really, that keeps things where they don't want to. Or you're playing a Shang-Chi to like take over 1 lane and then still having enough extra energy because now you would have 3 more energy to play other stuff in order to take over the game. So like that, you can do all these different last turn things with Sarah. Makes her fantastic.
Yep. I think that that's really good. We were also asked, what variants do you own? Or best variants that you own? I own a lot of variants. Mine is probably the Jessica Jones variant. It's one of the Alex McGee ones where she has like a sort of winter coat on. I love that variant. It is the first variant I purchased with gold. I love it, love it, love it, love it, love it. I also purchased shortly after I got Thanos. a Thanos variant of like the one with Thanos like staring at the butterfly as it like drifts off. It's very like melancholy end of Avengers Infinity War Thanos, and I'm a sucker for that. So they sucked $10 out of my pocket. So
the only variant I have bought so far is this anime version of Sarah and Angela.
Those are good ones.
That I've bought for a variant. I don't really like the Angela very much, but I really, really, really love the Sarah one. I think the Sarah one is gorgeous. So that Sarah is the favorite one I bought of the two I bought, but it is also just one of my favorite variants. The other favorite variant, my favorite variant I pulled is I've got the Doc Ock where he's like sort of dressed as a gray Spider-Man.
That's the superior Spider-Man, man.
Well, the Superior Spider-Man is a different color scheme, but like it's similar to the Superior Spider-Man. Or like maybe there's a later Superior Octopus Spider-Man that I didn't read because I read the original slot version. But whatever. It's like when I actually play Doc Ock in some decks where I definitely shouldn't have because I think that one is extremely cool. Oh, also, now that you have Shuri, Roy, one of the things you can do with Shuri is Shuri into Doc Ock and then Arnim Zola the Doc Ock's away. The 20 drop 20 in two lanes.
That's pretty funny.
Someone mentioned that the other day and I was like, oh, Roy would really enjoy doing that.
I should probably try doing that.
All right. What if you could have any variant, what are the variants you, what variant would you get, Roy?
Any Shuri variant. I find the like base Shuri to be really ugly. Like, I don't think it's a very flattering drawing of the character. And like there are some awesome Shuri variants. Like, I'd literally take any of them at this point, besides the like staring at this like really weirdly drawn Shuri. Like, I mean, ideally like the one like her, the her comics accurate Black like Panther suit, or the like the kid version one of her has like a really cool drawing of like her hair that's really like awesome and powerful for like, again, it's a, her as a kid. Like, those are all really cool drawings, but like I do not like the base Shuri at all.
Cool. I want the white Magneto. Magneto is one of my 10-ish favorite X-Men characters. I would also really like the white Emperor Doom. I don't know why, but I think the supervillains look extremely cool with that all white thing. Those are, unless I'm missing something obvious, easily my two favorite Marvel villains. And I want those cool versions of them. Also not bad, body condom Cyclops.
Sure.
I don't understand why you don't love Cyclops.
I don't mind Cyclops, but the body condom thing kind of threw me off. I understand sort of the costume you're talking about, but it took me a minute.
That's what I've always heard it called. It's like the how it's most commonly referred again, to in the net.
You've been listening to a lot of JMLs.
I don't think they call it that.
I have a feeling that they did at some point.
It's entirely possible they did.
Seems all like right. A joke they would make. Then... Ridiculous hat ass favorite glaze. I mean, it has to be Aaron Glazer, so that's mine.
Mine is a nice hot honey. I really enjoy a hot honey glaze. I also enjoy that Ridiculous Hats questions are very appropriate for someone who goes by the handle Ridiculous Hat. Hat will, hopefully, assuming we can work out the time, be joining us for an episode relatively soon. So we're looking forward to you joining us, Hat. If you, by the way, if you play Hearthstone, you should 1000% look up his Hearthstone podcast because I don't play Hearthstone. I don't give a shit about Hearthstone. His Hades podcast was legitimately like completely top notch. I absolutely loved it. So I can't imagine he's suddenly not a great podcaster about the game that he spent the most time on.
Cool. Are we doing this Arrow question?
Yeah, yeah. Real fast. How do you build Arrow? Three ways.
Wait, hold
first
on.
Way. Nope, go fire.
Because I don't think this is on here. It's not. You have to ask yourself, why are you building around Arrow? Do you want to do like Kingpin, like Arrow stuff, like bad Arrow stuff? So people are going to want to do that, Aaron. I know. I just want to make this clear.
I didn't even think of that.
Like, if you want to, like, is your deck like, I really just want to abuse specifically the unique thing Arrow does, which is guarantee that everything in your opponent's last turn can get killed by Kingpin as long as they don't play it in Kingpin's lane. Hey, if you want to do that.
Then play Sarah. Because you can play them both Sarah on the last turn.
You can. But I want to make sure that that's like specifically called out. Like, Glazer's going to give you like sort of three good stuff things you can do with Arrow. But there's a specific deck you can build around her that is about abusing specifically the unique things you can do in the game. So if you want to do that, go ahead. Kingpin, make sure you open Kingpin 2, and I think you can have a lot of fun. You just got to keep in mind that that may not be the most optimal thing that you can
do. Yeah, he's going to lose you some games. Go ahead. Okay. So you can Bayrou. That is the Death Wave deck that runs Arrow as part of its top end. I think She-Hulk has mostly replaced Arrow in that deck at this point. But look, that was the meta deck when the... like, what was it, 2 months ago at this point? Mm-hmm. And the deck is still quite good. You will win some games if you run a death with a kill stuff combo, wave and arrow. Because playing death and arrow on the last turn is an extremely powerful combo. Thing number two is you can play a good stuff build. Good stuff builds are popularized by, I believe, by Dara Jan. Who is one of the, in my personal opinion, the two best players of content creators that we have around right now. Dara basically says you run like Iceman and Sunspot, Armor, Lizard, Scorpion, then just like Thor and Maximus, and you just run the best card at every slot. If you're running the best card at every slot and you add a Shuri, because Shuri is like the ultimate good stuff amplifier, having a 14 power arrow, just being able to say, not only do I have 14 power, but everything you play is where I want it to be within that 14 power, is an extremely, extremely good thing. So that good stuff Shuri arrow deck is very good. Arrow is already good in that deck, but if you add a Shuri, it's an amplifier. And lastly, we already discussed the Sarah way to do it. I don't think that's necessarily a Kingpin deck. I think the Kingpin version of it, to me, assuming you want to win, right? The Kingpin version of Sarah is the Surfer version that Hoogland made a million years ago. I don't think that's the best version. However, I really, really like Sarah decks where part of how I climbed last season, one of the decks I played, although I haven't played it much this season, is I would Sarah on five and then arrow along with a couple of two drops on six. And I think that is a very powerful combo. Also, if you are really, really, really struggling with Galactus and you can get priority, and like if they're going to electro into Galactus, arrow messes that right the F up.
It does do that.
All right. We are up to, let's call it a night.
You want to call it a night? You don't want to talk about the big one that you have written
I
here?
I do want to talk about the big one. I figured it was late. All right, fine. Last one. We're going to skip variants of the week. We're going to do variants of the week three next week. Sorry about that. Variants of the bye week for the time being. Do you feel like Snap is becoming pay to win?
All card games are pay to win, is my answer. I think, but it's Snap, I don't think, is significantly outside the range. I think it's harder to, I think it's hard to consistently pay to win in Snap because of the issues we talked about earlier. And I think, like all card games, really what it does is it lowers the amount of effort a mediocre player has to have to beat a better player. If the mediocre player or terrible player has better, more expensive cards, I'm doing scare quotes here, the good player has to work harder. But a good player can, in card games, always outplay their opponent. Sometimes that may not lead to a win, but almost always, because sometimes you are not playing chess, okay? Like, or League of Legends or any of these other like high skill, high reward decks. By choosing to play superhero poker, you are accepting that you will lose some portions of the game. I think where Marvel Snap to me is in a good place about this is that there is nothing so broken that if you take a credit card out, you would just consistently always beat a player who is better than you just simply because the gap between cards is so huge and that the answer cards themselves are play to win. I think we've talked about this before on the show. I think the smartest thing that they did with their current model is put most of the answer cards mm-hmm. in pool two so that by the time you enter competing with the pay to win people, you do have an answer to what they're doing. And if you put the time and skill into learning it, you can beat people who are doing the busted stuff. Not 100% of the time, not even 90, but consistently in the 60s to me, particularly if a person is truly bad. Like, but you're not going to get that 100% win rate. So I think, to me, Marvel Snap is in the range of acceptable for pay to win.
So I think Marvel Snap feels particularly pay to win right now. Hey, sorry, I found us on my podcatcher. I was like, oh yeah, did we show up on my podcatcher? Apparently my podcatcher runs through Spotify. I think that Marvel Snap is not pay to win as little pay to win as basically any game I've ever played, with one big caveat. You need to be buying season passes. It's buy season pass to win. If you don't have Surfer and you don't have Zebu right now, you are at a crazy disadvantage.
That's fair.
There's one other major caveat though, and that other major caveat is the two best four cost cards in the game, I think. And I'm like Rolodexing mentally. Wow, that's an old reference, huh? Rolodex. Mentally, I
know what that is.
Yeah, no, everyone's just lost. Ridiculous hat nose. It's cool. I'm pretty sure that the two best four cost cards in the game are Pool 5 or Series 5. Shuri and Darkhawk. I'm not 1,000% sure because White Queen is real good. Moon Girl is pretty good. Wow. And then Wong, I don't think Wong is that good. And then the two big answer cards of Enchantress and Shang-Chi are all very good, but I think like the best good stuff cards of four drops are still going to be Darkhawk and Shuri at the end of the day in my head, and I could be wrong. I like it's relatively close, but like if you're trying to play four drops, that the two best at a cost slot, especially cost slot that the current season pass card has caused a hyper focus to be on, are fundamentally cards you can only have if you pay. Like, there have been games where, like, my opponent shuries into something big, and I'm just like, oh, well, I can't win now. Right? Mm-hmm. And, like, I don't... When Shuri is pool 3, that's something I meta against. That's something I play against. But because Shuri is pool 5, I consider it less. Does that make sense?
No, it makes perfect sense.
So, like, I think that there's a hyper-focus on that change right now, wherein I don't believe that hyperfocus is going to like exist forever because Shuri's coming down a level and so on and so forth. And like, I mean, maybe there's new complete meta cards that pop up in pool 5. But like, at least within the first month, none of these cards should be meta defining that are coming into pool 5. And we'll see about next month, right? So if that is the case, then I am not as concerned about this. But if you want to be competitive in the game, I strongly, and like I told all my friends this, our friend Matt bought the season pass on like the third to last day to get Surfer. I strongly urge you to get the damn season pass if you want to remain like top of the meta competitive. I don't know if they're always going to be meta defining, but like you should really make your life significantly easier by having Zebu. And like, if you're free to play and can't afford it, I'm very sorry. But like, if you're free to play and can't afford it at all, then I think the amount of time and energy you're going to save not banging your head into the wall has to be $10 worth.
Yeah, I think particularly I find your argument about the season pass pretty convincing. I think this is also maybe a generational issue, and also somebody who, I mean, the number of like real mobile games that I have played, like a lot of, would be like the Fire Emblem one I've played on and off occasionally, but I only ever really played it as a true gacha game. It's like, oh, I want the art of the characters I like, and I want the characters to be in my thing, and I'll play this until I get bored with it. Hearthstone and Magic Arena, but I never really played Arena as like a mobile game. I always played on my computer. I never really super loved the phone version of Arena. And like, so I'm not somebody who like is in the culture of like spending $10 a month on a game is like pay to win, right? It just seems like a reasonable thing, right? But if you're somebody who, you know, plays a lot of these games, or is you significantly younger than we are, you know, whether that means financially speaking, you just don't have the money to afford $10, or you just grew up in a gaming culture where like free to play is the median experience compared to what you and I are playing for like Super Nintendo games, right, comparatively, right? And things like that when we were that age, or
Genesis,
or PlayStation, even PlayStation 1 games, right? Mm-hmm. I get that. I think another problem that can definitely make the game feel more pay to win is that the question cards, that's the big threat cards, are pay to win cards, while the answer cards are free cards. And I would say a majority of card game players prefer to be asking the question than providing the answer and doing the big cool thing that's powerful. And the fact that a lot of the big cool things are locked at least behind $10, is, you know, like whether or not, you know, in some sort of ideal world, like where you control how people feel, it's pay to win or not. I can definitely see how that experience makes people feel like it's pay to win. And at the end of the day, how people feel is fundamentally what matters, whether or not in some sort of objective sense, it's true or not.
I dig it. I absolutely dig all of that. I'm with you.
All right. So Glazer does not want to talk about our variants of the week. So we're going to move on and do our socials. So you can find us on Facebook at Snap Judgments. We are on the Snap Fan Discord. We have our own Snap Judgments channel and sort of sub-channels in there. You should definitely join us. We have great discussion. It's a very sort of mature discussion. Lots of good back and forth. Glazer's very active in there. I'm in there occasionally. Chris is in there occasionally. I've even had a Will spotting in there. So everybody who has been there, who's been on the show, is in there. So really, that's the best way to get in touch with us. There is also our Twitter, which is SnapJudgeCast. Glazer really runs the Twitter account, and he's been on fire recently tweeting. So if you want sort of,
I've like, tweeted like seven whole times.
I mean, that's more than I have. I've tweeted two whole times. So fair. One to put the permanent link to our website, and one to announce the last episode. And that's probably the speed of which I will tweet. Anyway, these are all places to engage with us. And then, of course, if you want to reach us directly, you can email us at snapjudgmentspodcast@gmail.com. Again, that's snapjudgmentspodcast@gmail.com. Glazer, on our way out, do you want to tell us a recommendation that you have for our loyal listeners?
Sure. I love JRPGs. JRPGs are like my video game genre of choice. I am playing a SNES-inspired JRPG created by one person. His name is, I believe, Matthias Linda. He is a German fella who developed a game basically solo. It is one of the best indie games I've ever played. It's called Chained Echoes. It is inspired by things like Xenogears and Chrono Trigger. And it's got like a ton of modern conveniences in it. So it's not, it feels like you're playing an old game without the inconveniences of playing a very old game. It is absolutely stellar. I'm at the start of the final dungeon, and unless this suddenly decides to be a complete disaster, this is going to be one of my favorite games.
Cool. I will recommend that you should watch both Knives Out and The Glass Onion, a Knives Out mystery, if you have not yet, on Netflix, if you still have a Netflix subscription, which apparently canceling it is the cool thing to do right now. It's great. It's a fun murder mystery. You will hear many murder mystery recommendations from me throughout the life of our podcast. It is a thing I am a mark for, and this both are excellent. I did not enjoy The Glass Onion as much as I enjoyed Knives Out, but they are both excellent. So with those recommendations, friends, I want to remind you once again that you should come and talk with us on the SnapFan Discord, of which the link is in the show notes of this episode. But until the next episode, or you come and chat with us on that Discord, we are going to snap ourselves out. Thank you.